Morning, we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 4th Canto, Chapter 23. Maharaj Bhagavatam's Going Back Home. Today's text number 8. Let me just do the word for word, then we'll chant the verse together. Tena, thus by practicing such austerities, Krama, gradually, Ani, constantly, Tidhena, by perfection, Vlasta, smashed, Karma, fruitive activities, mala, dirty things, ashaya, desire, prana, ayama, by practice of pranayama yoga, breathing exercises, san, being, niruddha, stopped, satvarga, the mind and the senses, chana, bandhana, completely cut off from all bondage. Tena kramanusidhena dvasta karma malashaya pranayamai sanirudha satvargaschena bandhanaha. Translation: by thus practicing severe austerities, Maharaj Prithu gradually became steadfast in spiritual life and completely free from all desires for fruitive activities. He also practiced breathing exercises to control his mind and senses, and by such control he became completely free from all desires for fruitive activity. Purport. The word pranayama is very important in this verse because the Hatha yogis and Ashtanga yogis practice pranayama. But generally, they do not know the purpose behind it. The purpose of pranayama or mystic yoga is to stop the mind and senses from engaging in fruitive activities. The so-called yogis who practice in Western countries have no idea of this. The aim of pranayama is not to make the body strong and fit for hard work, working hard. The aim is to worship Krishna. In the previous verse, it was specifically mentioned that whatever austerity pranayama and mystic yogic practices Prithu Maharaj performed were performed for the sake of worshipping Krishna. Thus, Prithu Maharaj serves as a perfect example for yogis also. Whatever he did to please the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. The minds of those who are addicted to fruitive activities are always filled with unclean desires. Fruitive activities are symptomatic of our polluted desire to dominate material nature. As long as one continues to be subject to polluted desires, he has to accept one material body after another. So-called yogis, without knowledge of the real purpose of yoga, practice it in order to keep the body fit. Thus they engage themselves in fruitive activities, and thus they are bound by desire to accept another body. They are not aware that the ultimate goal of life is to approach Krishna. In order to save such yogis from wandering throughout the different species of life, the Shastras warn that in this age, such yogic practice is simply a waste of time. The only means of elevation is the chanting of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. King Prithu's activities took place in Satya Yuga, and in this age, this practice of yoga is misunderstood by fallen souls who are not capable of practicing anything. Consequently, the Shastras enjoin, Kalo Nasteva, 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 Gatir Anyata. The conclusion is that unless the Karnis, Gyanis, and Yogis come to the point of devotional service to Lord Krishna, their so-called austerities and yoga have no value. Naradita, The Hari, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is not worshipped. There is no point in practicing meditation or yoga, performing karma yoga, or cultivating empiric knowledge. As far as pranayama is concerned, chanting of the holy name of the Lord and dancing in ecstasy are also considered pranayama. In a previous verse, Sanat Kumar instructed Maharaj Prithu to constantly engage in the service of the Supreme Lord, Vasudeva, yet pada pankaja palasya vilasa bhaktya karmashaya garitam ugratam janti santa. Only by worshipping Vasudeva can one become free from the desires of fruitive activities. Outside of worshipping Vasudeva, the yogis and gyanis cannot obtain freedom from such desires. Tavadna rikta matayo yato pi rudha stroto ganastam ananam bhaja vasudevam. Bhagavatam 4:22-39. Here the word pranayama does not refer to any ulterior motive. The actual aim is to strengthen the mind and senses in order to engage them in devotional service. In the present age, this determination can be very easily acquired simply by chanting the holy names, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Rama Hare Hare. Om Ajnana Timurandasya, Janamajana Shalakya, Chakshuram Mittamena, Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Actually, there's little to say after a purport like this by Srila Prabhupada, where he makes it so very clear that in this age of Kali, chanting the Hare Krishna mantra can fulfill all the desires of everyone. Sankirtan. It means it's a complete glorification of the Supreme Lord, and includes the benefits that are achieved by any other type of endeavor. That's rather difficult to accept, even for those of us who practice the chanting of Hare Krishna. How many times do in the course of the day do each of us think that, well, I should do this, or I have to get this task accomplished, so therefore I'll chant Hare Krishna later. But let me do this now, and then later I'll chant Hare Krishna. But actually, if we just simply chanted Hare Krishna, there wouldn't be any lacking in our life in any way. Of course, that realization takes some time to come to. Just as Srila Prabhupada is explaining here in the purport, that those yogis that do practice yoga for the purpose of understanding the Supreme Lord, it takes some time for them to become free from this idea of fruitive activity. Fruitive activity, as described here, is symptomatic of our polluted desire to dominate material nature. What's another word for that? Our polluted desire to dominate material nature. What's another word for that? Lust, more general. It's like a general, very general word.
Power.
My ignorance, basically. That's ignorance. Desire to dominate material nature is ignorance. In the 13th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna explains to Arjuna many things which are knowledge, which constitute knowledge. And what are the first two? Or the first one or two of those? Humility. Somebody saying there? Humility. And what's the second one? Pridelessness. Two in a row, I mean, saying the same thing. Humility and pridelessness. Those things are so valuable. They are knowledge because they indicate to us that we shouldn't be trying to dominate material nature. That's ignorance. We can't dominate material nature. We don't dominate material nature. We are dominated by material nature. But ignorance means that prakute kriyamanani gunai kamani sarvasa ahankara brahmatva kartaham imanyate. Ignorance means that we think that we can dominate material nature, and therefore we engage in fruitive activities. But fruitive activities are symptomatic of ignorance. So we need to become humble, prideless, to realize this. Pride is actually a kind of blindness. A kind of blindness. It prevents you from seeing what's the actual truth. It's not that there aren't sincere people, karmis, gyanis, yogis, or the reflection of those three paths in life in material terms. It's not that they aren't sincere people or that they're not trying, but factually, without understanding Krishna, without placing Krishna in the equation of one's life, in any three of those paths, karma, jnana, or yoga, one is actually blind. Om jnana timarandasya gananjana shalakaya. We're all born into the darkness of ignorance, and getting this spiritual knowledge given by the spiritual master, it's forcing open our eyes. We don't want our eyes to be open. We want to remain in ignorance. We have that desire to remain in ignorance. But our eyes are forced open, and the first thing we see is what? We see, first thing we see are the lessons we get in Bhagavad Gita, that actually, you're not the doer of your activities. That's illusion. That's not the way things are, even though it's so strong, that idea is so strongly embedded in the world. Even in spiritual circles, we find so many histories in the Vedic tradition where people engage in karma, but also jnana and yoga for material purposes. For material purposes. Even great, big sages, munis, they engage in severe austerities and penances to achieve some material purpose. Does anybody recall anyone that did that? Huh? Oh, Hirani Kashyapu, yeah, he's a demon. Even pious people, let's talk about pious people. Demons, they'll do anything. They always do all crazy things. Some pious person. Yes, Vishwamitra. Who said it? Vishwamitra, yeah. Vishwamitra, he's a great sage, a very pious person. Yet he was engaging in very severe austerities and penances for mundane purposes. And even he was doing it, at least at one stage, not for himself, he was doing it for somebody else. What was the name of that king that's still hanging there? Halfway?
Trishanku,
yes. Trishanku had this desire. He wanted to go to the heavenly planets in his self-same body. But that's not possible. But he was insistent. He was a little hard-headed person. We say in America, he's hard-headed. He couldn't get it. So he wanted to go in his same body, and he couldn't go. And he went up there, and the demigods threw him out, and And Vishwamitra used all the pious credit he got from performing austerities to push him back up. So he was like going up, coming down, going up, coming down. So even great sages, they succumb to this idea that by one's own endeavor, one can achieve a particular result. That's what fruitive activities means. By my endeavor, I'll endeavor in this way, and I will achieve a particular result. And it almost seems like it works, doesn't it? I mean, we do so many things where we engage in a certain way, and then the result comes, and we're automatically thinking, that result came because of my endeavor. That's how we're thinking. That's how the whole world thinks. But factually, it's not true. Factually, it's not true. Material nature. We're not the doer. We're not the cause of the fruit. But we're running around in ignorance thinking like that. And that is what we have to give up. Sometimes we even come to devotional service, and because that contamination is so strong, we think that devotional service to the Supreme Lord is the same as fruitive activity. We think like that about what we do here. But actually, there's a fundamental difference between fruitive activity and devotional service. A fundamental distinction based on knowledge. Devotional service is meant to satisfy Krishna, that's all. And that's what is described in yesterday's verse, and Prabhupada repeats in today's purport. That's the purpose of devotional service, to please Krishna, that's all. It's not as people think about us. Like people, they come here. So many people come for the tour program here, and they see there's a community of devotees, and they're living different ways. And they may respect that. I'm sure most of them do. They respect that. But what are they actually thinking? They're thinking, well, these people, they've chosen a way in life to get their food and shelter and defense and mating and all that that's different than the way I've chosen it. But essentially, it's the same. They chose a particular way to get their chapatis. I chose a different way to get my chapatis. But essentially, they're working for their chapatis in one way and getting them, and I'm working for my chapatis in a way and getting it another way. But it's not a fact. It's not a fact. They're working according to the illusion that if I work in this way, I'll get this result. And the devotees are working just to please Krishna. It doesn't matter what the result is. A devotee of the Lord is not interested in the results of his activities. That's not part of the calculation. And that's taught. Prabhupada's given the example. It's taught from the very beginning when the child goes to the Gurukula. What does he say about the students? They work there all day very hard for the Guru. And if the Guru doesn't call them for prasadam, do they take it upon themselves to show up? Oh, where's my plate? No. They voluntarily fast because it doesn't mean just because I worked hard all day that, you know, I deserve to sit down and take prasadam. Unless the Guru calls them to come. Yes, you come and take. They won't come. Because the training is that we are dependent upon the Lord's mercy. Krishna Prasad, Guru Prasad. The mercy, that's all the devotee can expect. That's all the devotee can expect. He serves the Lord to please him, and he's completely dependent on the Lord's mercy, whatever the Lord wants to do. What did Prabhupada pray when he came? Imagine the sacrifice. Prabhupada was near 70 years old, wasn't in good health, struggled like anything to come to America, had two heart attacks on the way, and when he got here, he said, well, it wasn't like, okay, Now, I deserve success based on the austerities I performed to get here. Now, what did he say? He said, well, make them dance. Make me dance if you want, this way, that way. It's all up to you. That's indicative of a level of consciousness that's different. And that's really all that's different. In the Bhagavad Gita purport to the verse 317 that we quoted, Prakriti Kriyamanani. Do you know, does anybody recall what the first sentence of that purport says? That's the translation. The purport is that, what is it? 3 what?
27.
327, not 17. The purport starts, two persons, one in Krishna consciousness and the other in material consciousness, working on the same level, may appear to be working on the same platform, but there is a wide gulf of difference in their respective positions. The person in material consciousness is convinced by false ego that he is the doer of everything. He does not know the mechanisms of the body is produced by material nature, which work under the supervision of the Supreme Lord. The ignorant man forgets that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is known as Hrishikesh, or the master of the senses of the material body. For due to his long misuse of the senses and sense gratification, he is factually bewildered by the false ego, which makes him forget his eternal relationship with Krishna. So, addiction to material, to fruitive activities also creates a lot of doubt in our mind. Because I was saying a minute ago that we are dependent on the mercy of Krishna.
Right.
You mean he might not call me, I might starve? But why would we think that way? Why do we think that way about Krishna? Do you think Krishna is so ungrateful that he won't maintain his own children? He's already made the arrangement for everybody. That they're getting exactly, everyone's getting what they need. Everyone's getting what they need. But because we're thinking that I have to work by fruitive means to get it, then when we think that surrendering to Krishna means, we'll think, well, is it actually going to happen? When Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was instructing Sanatana Goswami on the Atmarama verse, he told him the story of Narada Muni and Murghari, the hunter. We all know that story of Murghari. How he killed animals in such a horrible way, regularly. And how he was... And how he was thinking that this is how I make my livelihood, this is how I maintain my body, by half-killing these animals, and then when they finally die, either eating them or skinning them or whatever he did. But when he came under the influence of Narada Muni, he realized the nature of the sinful activities he was performing, and he decided, okay, I'll stop. So Narada Muni told him, what is the first thing he told him?
Break your
bow. Yeah, he said, break your bow. He said, well, what? How am I going to get my chapatis? If I break the bow, that's how I get my livelihood. Why are you asking me to do that? So his first test as a disciple, his first test in spiritual life, was to accept this principle that it's not by fruitive activities that you will get your needs in life, but it's by the mercy of the Guru, by the mercy of Krishna. And so Narada Muni assured him, don't worry, trust me. You'll get everything you need. Just break your bow and you worship like I told you. Worship like you told me? Just worship alone? That's enough to ensure that things are going to go on? How is it possible? Just doing, chanting Hare Krishna? That's enough? Yes, that's enough. Yes, that's enough. So he had the good fortune to take that instruction. And people were so amazed that they came to see, oh, this hunter has now turned into a sadhu. Let's go see. So they came there, they were impressed, and they started giving him all his necessities of life, bringing him so many things. So many things that it became a problem for him. So when his spiritual master came back the next time, and he came to see me, he asked him, so, Nagari, everything is going all right. He said, yes, by your mercy, but there's one problem. Don't send so much, I can't take it all, I can't use it all. You're sending too much. So he's more than taken care of. And was it fruitive activity? Chanting Hare Krishna, worshipping Tulsi Devi, living in his little hermitage. Was he engaged in fruitive activity? Is that how all things started coming to him? No, it came to him by Guru Prasad, by the mercy of his Guru. And so, we need to develop that kind of faith, because the path we've taken in life is not one of fruitive activities. All of our activities are meant to serve the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and we're completely dependent upon Him. Whatever He sends, however He reciprocates with us, or if He doesn't reciprocate with us, that's our lot in life. That is freedom from fruitive activity. That's freedom from ignorance. And that's leading a life based on knowledge. Now, even in that life based on knowledge, there may be some slight differences. Maharaj, he's a sannyasi. Ramkandachara, Kampachara, he's a brahmachari. Gopahari is a brahmachari. That's a rare thing. I mean, you go to temples today, you can't say, well, this is a brahmachari. One, two brahmacharis, the rest, hundreds and thousands are all grahastas. So, that's okay. But it doesn't mean that sannyasi, brahmachari, grahastha, that, oh, grahastha is engaged in fruitive activity. Sannyasi is a renounced brahmachari. No. All of this is not fruitive activity. Even if, as we see the example here, Maharaj Preacher is performing yoga. He's performing mystic yoga process, pranayama. That's also not a different path. That's also not, it's not fruitive, not a fruitive path, as people misunderstand it to be today. So, we need to come to this realization that this is the path we're on, this is the path we've chosen in life, to depend upon Krishna. And I think that all of us have individual stories about how this is, how we see Krishna reciprocating with us in this way. I was talking with Ramchandra Kavaraj the other day, and he was telling me some of the experiences he had like that, where simply depending upon Krishna, and Krishna helps in so many different ways. Surprising ways, unexpected ways, but to take care of us, to protect us, to get us where we need to go, to give us prasadam, to eat, to maintain our bodies. Krishna is active in our lives like that, and we need to be awake enough, not covered with ignorance, but awake enough, have our eyes forced open enough to be able to see it. And if we do, then we'll see it happening every day in our lives. Best if we see it every moment in our lives. But at least if we can see glimpses of it as we gradually develop this consciousness, that would be moving towards the goal of life. Full satisfaction in service of Krishna. So, we'll stop there. If there are any comments or questions, anyway, yes?
Sometimes I have a fear or doubt that Krishna won't protect us and look after us. It's based on our awareness of our anarthas. Because they're not very endearing or lovable qualities.
Unfortunately, we have the mercy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, because he doesn't consider those things. And Nityananda Prabhu, oh, even more merciful. Fortunately, their mercy is there for us. Patita Pavana. Indeed, they're so merciful that the great devotees, they pray that I'm the most fallen, and that is my qualification for your mercy. Because I'm so fallen. It's not a cause of fear for me, because I know how merciful you are, that I'm so fallen. Therefore, please, I have no other shelter, don't kick me away, please be merciful to me. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Nityananda Prabhu, entire Panchatattva, my poor Dham is Aroja, Adoya, yes. It's that place where the mercy is very prominent. That's the prominent mood there. The mercy of the Supreme Lord. So we can all just move to Mayapur. Any other point? Yes.
You're speaking about everybody in the material world thinks that they're the doers of their activities, and when a result comes, it was because of my action. But we see that if you don't do something, then you won't get a reaction. If you don't do something good, there won't be pious credit. If you don't do something bad, there won't be a bad reaction. Even the same as their devotional service. Probably execute devotional service. We have to discharge devotional service. So it's all these verbs, and there's going to be action. So we have to do something. But how is it that we're not doing anything?
How is it that we're not doing anything? We're not doing anything in the sense that there's no reaction to our activities or our actions. But what there is in response to our actions in devotional service is love. That's the difference. There's fruit of activities and ignorance, and then there's love. The love between the Lord and His devotees is what that reciprocation actually is. And so when we do devotional service, it's not like karma where you do this and you do so much and you get so much back and things like that. It's a matter of a loving exchange. And therefore we find it out of proportion. If you love a little bit, if you do a little bit of devotional service, the benefit you get is so great that you can't calculate it in terms of fruitive activity. Like, well, I did this much and I should have got that much. But I did this little bit of devotional service and I got this big mountain of, you know, reciprocation from Krishna. That's the nature of love. It's not, you know, a tit for tat kind of experience. And so, that's what our doing in devotional service is about. It's loving Krishna. We love Krishna, and that love is manifest by doing something or not doing something. That's also can be a manifestation of our love for Krishna, not doing something. So, and in Krishna, He also loves us back. And so loving exchanges with Krishna doesn't mean just, you know, like some kind of impersonal kind of love, but it means there's action, activities going back and forth. The devotee tries to serve Krishna, and Krishna tries to serve his devotees. But then the devotee says, well, I'm going to do more for Krishna. I'm going to serve Krishna. I'm going to love Krishna more by doing this. And Krishna says, well, you can't do more than me. I'm going to do more than you. And what do they say? That Krishna has more hands to give you than you have hands to receive. So you can, like, you'll always lose to Krishna in this exchange of loving sentiment. So anything else before we end? Yes.
I had one time when I was teaching Bhaktisastri at this point when the doer came up, and one boy was asking me about the difference. Sometimes it said the ritual, the doer, sometimes Krishna is the doer, and sometimes the Yeni is considered the doer. And I found a purport in Virja, but I was just looking for it. I can't find it now. that at different times Krishna and the Acharyas emphasize this point of the doer, the different, according to the lesson that needs to be learned.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of helped me out, and I was saying, do you understand? And she's going, no. And I guess that it is a complex topic, and sometimes we have to resign ourselves. Krishna's the doer, something we have to do. Until energy is the doer, something we have to take responsibility for ourselves for deciding that we want to be the doer.
Well, all of that's mixed with the, it's all a kind of a different kind of understanding, though, than the materialist who thinks simply that, you know, I am the doer, I'm the controller. So, we should end there. Our Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam.